This is the You Can Learn Chinese podcast, part of the Seneca Network from SUP China. For everyone who's trying to learn Chinese or reaching for the next level, you came to the right place. I'm your host, Jared Turner, longtime resident of China, co-founder of the Mandarin Companion Graded Reader Series, and keep the dream alive. Hit the snooze button. My co-host is John Paston, founder of Mandarin Companion, founder of All Set Learning, the Chinese grammar wiki, sinosplice.com, and thinks that locksmiths should count as key workers. In this episode, John and I review a paper written by a professor from the University of Nottingham who incorporated graded readers and theater into a Chinese class. You'll find out what worked well and ideas that you can add to your Chinese learning. Guest interview is with Denis Suslov, who is from a small town in Russia on the northern border with China. He moved to China when he was 17 to study Chinese and is still there today. All this and more, let's get to it. Hey guys, this is Jared Turner coming at you from Utah in the United States.
Hey guys, I am John Pasden based in Shanghai, China. How's it going?
Now we have some exciting news that we're first going to talk about. We are now part of the SUP China podcast network.
Right. So what does that mean? SUP China, if you've heard about it, is an awesome network of podcasts as well as news about China. And we're the one related to learning Chinese.
If you can check out SUP China, they have great podcasts. There's the Seneca podcast, which is very popular out there. It's just about Chinese news. There's the Tech Buzz China. There's the China in Africa podcast. And there's a bunch of podcasts just about living in China, economics. It's a great network, and we're really excited to be part of it. All right, before we get into today's discussion, we do have a review. It's from James E. Sharp here from the United States. He says, motivation and nuance. I've been listening from the beginning and haven't missed an episode. Chinese learners are often either immersed in China or constantly maintaining a meticulously constructed immersion bubble. Tons of tips for that in these shows. We often need some fresh air and English. The title rightly portrays what this show is, pure motivation. They inspire with reality rather than ridiculous guarantees. These guys never fly off into the Uber or anti-academic ditches. They constantly reorient us learners according to our goals, applying expertise both from experience and linguistic education to help us along our paths. Jiayou, James E. Sharp. Hey, James, appreciate that. That's a very kind review.
Yeah, thanks a lot, James. We do not provide ridiculous guarantees. That is true. So as our listeners know, occasionally we jump into some kind of paper to talk about research or ideas from an academic perspective related to learning Chinese. And one of our past guests and a good friend of Mandarin Companion, Diane Neubauer, she has provided us with a paper that she thought might be good for our show.
This comes from a conference in Italy that was in November 2019, the 12th International Conference Innovation and Language Learning. Specifically, it's Professor Su Jingxu from the University of Nottingham in the UK. And the paper is titled Enhancing Chinese Literacy Skills Through Drama Activities, a case study of Mandarin Chinese for Beginners course at the University of Nottingham. Now, I will say, side note, John, I've actually been to the University of Nottingham.
Ooh, it exists.
It sure does.
Okay, so this paper, what's it about?
It's about a professor who is teaching a beginning Chinese course. It was the second semester, and what she had the idea to do is involve some drama related activities into her class. And what she did is she took one of our Mandarin Companion novels, specifically Emma. She had her students read it. And halfway through reading it, the students then broke out into groups of two and three, and they were to write small one act or two act play that was a derivative of one or two characters that were from the book. So they were to write this short play, and then they had to perform this play by the end of the semester as part of their grade.
Yeah, so you can imagine if you just started learning Chinese, you're in your second semester, putting together a play where you're speaking Chinese, that's pretty intimidating.
I was really excited to read this paper that she had written about this because, you know, this correlates closely to a collection of activities I've written for teachers that you have the student pick a character in this graded reader that they're reading, and you write some sort of tangent story, except she took it a step further and had the students dramatize it, which was an excellent thing to do.
Yeah, actually, when I first saw this paper, it took me back to my very early days in China, because when I first arrived in China in 2000, the plan was to stay for a year or two. I was teaching English in Hangzhou. I had some college kids, and I was just out of college myself. And one of the things I did, which I did partly just because I was able to do whatever I want, and I wanted to try to make it fun somehow, is I had a play final semester project as well. I had the kids broken down into groups, and rather than reading a book, we had been focused on like American slang all semester. I taught the kids, like in our class, they weren't allowed to say, "How are you?" They had to say like, "What's up? How's it going?" They had to use one of the greetings that I taught them, and they were not allowed to use those stale, stiff, you know, English phrases. It was so fun because the kids really got into it, and it must have been the only time in their English language education that they've been allowed to do something like that, like plays. And having to practice and then to have the interaction in front of the class, it really does bring the language to life. Like, there's no comparison between this and then like having your teacher read A and you read B and you go through a dialogue. It is just not the same thing at all. So Jared, you have experience in drama, right?
One of my favorite things were to do improv games. But, you know, bringing like improv games or just drama activities and stuff give you a great opportunity to leverage what you're learning and to use your Chinese. And, you know, and I like what this teacher did in this class. It wasn't just like writing a play, and it was a little bit more than that. In fact, what she really assigned the students to do was like in 1 week, they were supposed to read a chapter on their own. And then the next week they came into class and they discussed the story. So they were able to talk about it. And this is something I really recommend that people to do. And John, you've done this with All Set Learning, right? You've actually done courses like this where people read the books and they come back and discuss it with the tutor.
Right, exactly. Entirely in Chinese, just talk about what you read, what you understand, and your thoughts, your feelings, your reactions to the story developments.
Because when you have something to discuss, right, and it's not just some sort of stilted conversation or dialogue you're just reading back and forth, you actually have an exchange of ideas. I still recall back to an earlier interview I had with Ola Linga from Hacking Chinese. He pointed out to have an effective, even like sample conversations, there has to be some sort of mutual unknown. So the good example by this is about taking a piece of literature like this book, Emma, is that you don't know what the other person's opinion is about an aspect of the story. And so you actually get to ask genuine questions, and then you have another genuine response, and you have this exchange of information that both of you didn't know before. And that makes it relevant, right? It makes a more engaging conversation as opposed to just, you know, saying, let's talk about birthdays today.
Exactly. Yeah. We often call that the information gap, right? And if your question is like, how are you? And you know, they're going to say, fine, thank you. Then it's not communication. It's just a drill. That's exactly why improv is so great, because you don't know what they're going to say. And really, speaking in Chinese to anyone is improv. I mean, it's improv in your own language as well. But when it's in Chinese, it's a much harder form of improv. Fortunately, you don't have to be funny. It's still improv. So improv is much harder. But when you work your way through the creation of a drama, there is kind of that element of like, oh, what would I say? And so you have time to slow down and think it through. But it's much better if everyone is on the same page and you go through that whole discussion and everyone shares their view on the story and what they understand and what they like about it.
And going back to the paper, Professor Xu, she talks about what specifically happened in the class. She found that through reading the book that their students' vocabulary gradually expanded. Now, I am not surprised by this at all, because we see this over and over again, right? In a classroom, there's a lot of deliberate and explicit education and teaching of words. But usually in the classroom, there's not like tons of practice happens, because that's usually not what the classroom's for. You're teaching, and then the idea is to go outside the classroom and to practice. Well, this is exactly what happened, though, in the classroom, is that they were taught, the teacher was teaching them some Chinese, and then by going home and reading a chapter, it gave them opportunity to actually practice and see that Chinese in natural context and essentially get comprehensible input.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of the flipped classroom approach. If they're getting the input outside the classroom and then they're practicing the play, you know, they're doing the script with their classmates in the class, then they're actually getting the practice in the class, which is the flipped classroom approach.
And she said that these discussions in class, it provided a lot of context. So I imagine that the teacher was also able to expound and answer questions. And this is really important, because there are some purists might say, okay, all right, I really believe in extensive reading. And, you know, all I need is books and I can just self-study. And, you know, there is a good case for that, that yes, you can learn the language that way. But what we see time and time again is that if you take that concept of extensive reading and comprehensible input, but you also combine that with explicit instruction, and even a curriculum, as flawed as it may be, you will see even better gains because you have someone to help guide you through some of those things that you may not understand and also be able to expound on different areas when you're ready to learn.
So how about if we actually hear directly from the author? Can we hear some of these findings?
Ultimately, what happened is that the students produced an 8-minute play. And here's the feedback she said, is that, quote, "The quality of their products was impressive, both in terms of the vocabulary and sentence structures they used in the scripts. Many words and some sentence structures actually were not taught by the tutor in class, and they managed to use them correctly. Based on my class participation records, as well as survey results, students showed great enthusiasm for this project." And this is something, again, we do see time and time again in extensive reading, is that students learn something in class, but then they go and they read, they see it in natural context, not just in context, but they see it in many different contexts. They learn different phrases, they pick up different things, and it just all starts to kind of make sense in their head. And people being more motivated to learn, oh man, that's worth everything. I mean, just think about it. You know, there's been times when you've been super motivated to maybe learn Chinese or learn something else. And when you are really motivated and you're enjoying it, you learn better. You learn more.
Yeah, I think this experience of like being able to just say something, like use a word that you didn't know you knew. I think a lot of us language learners who have been at it for a while have all had this experience. But to be able to control that and to be able to make that happen more and more is something that a lot of us have not had. But if you do extensive reading, you know, you read graded readers, it's going to happen more and more. So it's really cool that these students in just their second semester were able to experience that through this experiment by the teacher.
And she also quoted a student who had said this, "I thoroughly enjoyed reading the book, Emma, and I believe it has helped me recognize more characters and has also taught me new sentence structures." We get emails, right, from readers that say essentially these types of things.
Yeah, it's funny. It seems obvious in retrospect. If you're just reading a textbook and like just reading the dialogue over and over again and maybe a few grammar examples, of course, you're not going to get really good at it by reading the same sentences over and over. Of course, it's superior to read different sentences using the same words and vocabulary in a meaningful way. But until you try it, it's hard to really believe the difference it makes.
Now, drilling down to also some of her other findings, this class wasn't just about having, you know, oral presentations and doing this drama activity. At the end of the semester, they also had a 2-hour timed exam. And it looks like it involved reading comprehension, grammar, essay writing, things like that. She found that the students had a noticeable improvement in the sections of reading comprehension and grammar compared to students in previous years. So, I mean, right there, there's a benchmark saying, hey, look, these students, compared to previous year students, outperformed them. However, she found that the essay writing did not see any noticeable improvement over previous years. Here's my takeaway from this, is that they required handwritten essays in their final exam.
So you're going to blame it on Chinese characters. That's what you're going to do, isn't it?
Well, if you have to handwrite them, absolutely.
Right. So this was a little tricky because she's not measuring just one thing, right? So they're doing the scripts, which they're producing, they're writing themselves, and they're acting them out. But what they're actually graded on is this exam, which is handwritten. So obviously, handwriting the answers on the exam is not an equivalent experience to creating a script, which you probably also didn't handwrite. So the activity doesn't necessarily reinforce what's being tested on the exam.
Absolutely. And as we talk about time and time again, right, John, is that learning to handwrite characters is a separate skill in and of itself.
Right. So it's not surprising that if their focus was not on handwriting, that their handwriting maybe lagged behind a little bit. But that's not to say that the teacher didn't do something really cool here. Schools are going to have their own requirements for exams and how teachers have to evaluate their students. But that doesn't mean that certain innovative teachers can't do something new and boost the students' motivation and give them a much more enjoyable experience.
You know, and I will give a good credit to this teacher. I think she gets this point because in her paper, she actually brings up the question that because the students have to handwrite Chinese characters, that perhaps it doesn't really reflect their true writing ability. And she pontificates saying, hey, if we were able to accept typed Chinese characters, would they have shown a noticeable increase in their writing ability? I will go out on a limb, and I don't think it's very far limb, John, to say that yes, they would. Because, I mean, all the other studies I've seen relating to extensive reading is that we see that it has a marked improvement in their listening, speaking, reading, writing, everything. It improves everything. People think like sometimes that if you just do extensive reading, it's just going to improve your reading ability. But no, that's not true. Because when you're doing extensive reading, essentially you're getting comprehensible input. And the language essentially just starts to, you know, make more sense as you get more and more input that you understand. And if the language just starts making sense in your head, obviously you're going to be able to use it better and you're going to be able to understand it better. So it filters through to improving your listening and your speaking and, of course, your writing. Now, mind you, writing is a skill. So the more you actually write, you'll really improve that more. But that being said, extensive reading, comprehensible input all by itself will improve all aspects of your language.
Yeah, and I got to say, I experienced this myself when I was doing my master's in applied linguistics in Chinese, like back in 2006 through 2008. I had to read all these papers for my graduate coursework, but I also had to write these papers for the class, right? And I was dreading these papers because, you know, I knew that I had to be at a level with my classmates or as close as possible, and I felt like I just wasn't up to it. But after having read all those academic papers, as I would type, I would just find these expressions just like coming out. I didn't even know they were in there. So wow. It definitely works. It's not only for beginners, it's for all levels. And when I would write by hand, which I tried to avoid doing, but I had to do that when I was in class.
That's hardcore, John.
Well, when I would write by hand, it just didn't really work because it couldn't flow, you know? But when I could type, then the effect was much more obvious. A lot of times these expressions that I didn't used to use would just start flowing out. Very cool. But there's something I want to bring up because this paper is about studying Chinese in the classroom and, you know, using a graded reader and then writing a play as part of the coursework. But what about our listeners who are just studying on their own, or maybe they're learning with a teacher one-on-one online or face-to-face? How does this apply to those individual students?
John, really, this kind of dances around, in my opinion, a whole bunch of other activities that are available to people who are studying by themselves and maybe have a tutor or someone that they can work with. So we touched on this just a little bit earlier, but in my mind, you know, one of the things you can do, so you, the listener right now, is you can get a book in Chinese, get something that's comprehensible. You can read it and you can talk about it with a language partner, a tutor, teacher, classmate, whoever. It allows you to now get some comprehensible input, think about it in Chinese, and then turn around and create some output to discuss something.
Right. And a few other things you could do is, one, if you're used to writing stuff and just writing like, this is what I think about summer vacation, one of those like writing assignments, don't forget that you can write a dialogue. I've found that writing a dialogue was much more interesting and actually more challenging because I'm supposed to be putting words in the mouths of these fictional native speakers of Chinese. And I actually learned a lot by doing that. Not only that, but if your coursework or whatever you're working on with your Chinese involves dialogues, one thing that can be really interesting is like doing a role play where you improv the same dialogue situation, but without requiring yourself to recite it, just loosely following it. Sky's the limit here. Be a little creative, but this type of productive output, which is different from the traditional approach, can be hugely effective and fun.
So, you know, what I like to say to Professor Xu, taking this full circle, at the end of the paper, they write suggesting that this research, this activity, should be like a starting point for a long-term ambition to firmly integrate educational drama into the university's Chinese language curriculum. Actually, what I might suggest, if I had Professor Xu right in front of me, what I would say is that more than necessarily integrating drama into the program, I think this actually underscores the power of implementing comprehensible activities into the program, such as extensive reading. And you know, I would give them a lot of ideas. And first off, I really got to applaud this professor for going out on a limb and doing this, because honestly, it's sometimes like extensive reading and graded readers, they make so much sense to you as a Chinese learner. But it's hard to figure out how to implement these things into our curriculum and in a way that's effective. And I know I've worked with teachers on it. It's not easy to do. But what I would suggest is that actually you look at bringing more and more literature at a comprehensible level, which in this case, it's going to be graded readers. There are so many activities that you can do, and some of them are drama-based and some may not be. But the point is that you're using them as a point of discussion, point as a opportunity to write things. So along this lines of a play, one of the activities I really love doing is saying, okay, when you get to the end of a story or end of a book, how about you rewrite the ending? And that's a wonderful activity. A lot of people have ideas. It can be get wacky or ridiculous. It can get romantic. It can be whatever it is. Or you write an additional chapter of the book. So you end at chapter 10. Well, now write a chapter 11. Okay, continue the story. Or as she did in this instance where they had picked a character in the middle of the play and created a tangent story and wrote an actual play. Well, it doesn't actually have to be a play. And so this is like, for example, you're studying Chinese. You don't have anyone to maybe do a play with or present to. Well, you can just write a story. You just write a story about that person. And you don't actually have to perform it, but you can write it. And maybe you read it to your teacher. And you can have an opportunity for some feedback and correction and try to implement some things you learn.
Yeah. And I think when it comes to this kind of level, like second semester, Manner Companion level one, the discussion is really important because there are going to be a few things that the readers miss or that they didn't quite understand. But there's also another option, which is, it might not have been an option then, but you can actually go lower. So for second semester, our breakthrough level graded readers would actually be a much more accessible choice for those learners. And so rather than learning lots of new vocabulary and grammar, they'd be really consolidating what they know and really mastering it, getting more fluent in the basics.
Absolutely. And I don't think she was aware of, I think when she started doing this, our breakthrough level had just started coming out. But yeah, for bringing first year students in their second semester, breakthrough would definitely be much more appropriate.
And again, that's the concept of extensive reading. You want it to be 98% or better, fully comprehensible without looking up anything.
Now, just bring this back all together, I think really the core behind this, it's not so much about how you're using, you know, necessarily which activity or that you're actually using extensive reading and graded readers. The core behind this is that you're getting comprehensible input. So this paper that she wrote, it really underscores the power of extensive reading because it makes a huge impact in your fluency and your proficiency in the language.
Yes, and we enjoyed reading and discussing this paper. So we want to again thank Diane Neubauer for sharing that with us. And also, 谢谢徐老师 for doing this experiment and for sharing it so that we can talk about it on our show as well. I hope that the changes to the industry can keep echoing throughout many classrooms and we'll be hearing more about this in the future as well.
Oh, you definitely will. All right, now it's time for a word from our sponsor. And our sponsor is
Mandarin Companion.
Oh, that's right. And today we are talking about our level one Mandarin Companion book, The Secret Garden.
Okay, so The Secret Garden, little trivia for you, was our very first graded reader. And we put a ton of time into developing this one, and we had quite a few good reasons for selecting this story. Right, Jared?
Oh, yeah. It was a very special book. I mean, because it was our first book, and it has proven to be one of our most beloved and best-selling titles out there because there's very heartwarming. First time I read it, I was like crying at the end. You know, oh, this is such a touching story. So you can go out there. You can get it today. You can find it on Amazon, iBooks, Kobo. It's The Secret Garden, Mandarin Companion, level one graded reader, uses only 300 basic characters.
Great illustrations, too. Enjoy.
Now it's time for Rants and Raves. John, what do you got for us today? You got a rant or do you have a rave?
I am following my streak of I don't know how many episodes now, but I've got another rave.
All right, man. I want to hear this.
I just want to make a little shout out for all the teachers that let us type in their classes rather than forcing us to write by hand. This is actually a big thing. I know that it's frequently discussed among Chinese teachers. I've talked to Chinese teachers about it. And if you can type, then things like writing plays, writing dialogues, all that kind of stuff becomes much more feasible. I just want to remind all the teachers out there that if this is possible, if this is an option at all, it's definitely worth trying. And for those of you that have not gotten into typing because you feel like you have to subject yourself to the torture of writing by hand, congrats. You've probably had enough pain. You might want to give typing a try.
Oh, typing. Thank goodness.
Technology, man. So, Jared, rant or rave, what do you got?
Okay, I got a rant. I got an email about a month ago from a reader and pretty much said they were looking at Journey to the Center of the Earth and they were excited to get it, but then found that none of the books are in pinyin. And they're saying that, hey, if you had a pinyin option, I'd buy it. And, you know, your sales would increase like another 50% and bring everyone happiness and joy. I felt a little bit sad about this. The short answer is no. We will not be creating books that are just pinyin and no characters. If you've been listening to this podcast any period of time, you know our stance on this, that if there is a book out there just in pinyin, well, you are really going to be limiting your ability to learn this language. Yes, at the beginning, it's easier just to learn pinyin. But there comes a point in the language that if you don't actually take the time to learn characters, how are you ever going to really understand the difference between shi, shi, and shi, right? Or wei, 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 or whatever. There's so many homonyms in the language. But characters give you so much more meaning, so much more depth. And to this person who is looking at The Journey to the Center of the Earth, that's a level two book. Really, what we tell people is like, hey, just start at the bottom. Start there at our breakthrough level, 150 basic characters. In fact, you know, there's even lower level stuff like, you know, Terry Waltz, her stuff. I mean, she's got stuff that's like as little as 50 characters. Get out there, learn some characters. They seem like spooky animals, scary things, but you can learn them. Just get out there and start learning. And then the language will start to come together. And there will come a point that if you take the time to really learn characters, that learning characters will not necessarily slow you down like it can at the beginning a little bit, but it'll really start to accelerate your language learning because it really brings the language together for you.
Yeah, and I would also like to point you guys to the series that we did before about learning to read and progressing from zero to advanced. Yeah, you can do it, and you definitely do want to get a strong foundation in pinyin, but then there is a time when you can move to characters. You can do it. You can learn Chinese.
Well, at least you can, John.
Everybody can, Jared.
I guess I have to agree with you. I mean, after all, it is the title of this podcast, right?
My name is Dennis. I'm from Russia originally.
Dennis is our first guest from Russia. However, there are a lot of Russians who speak Chinese. After all, they are right next to each other.
My hometown is right on the border with China. There is a river, and you cross the river, and right there is Heilongjiang province.
Dennis knew at an early age that Chinese would be part of his life. However, there are few who have made such a dramatic commitment at such an early stage of their life.
I studied at a university here. All my courses were in Chinese.
Where can your Chinese studies take you? The sky's the limit.
So right now I work at a Chinese company where our meetings are in Chinese, where I do a lot of reading and typing and communicating with my colleagues all in Chinese.
Stay with us. Okay, so Dennis, now I've got to ask the big question. Why did you start learning Chinese?
Right. So coming from the far eastern part of Russia, it was kind of natural. A lot of people back there are learning Chinese.
You're right on the border of China, right? So were there actually Chinese people in your hometown?
Yep. There are some Chinese people who do business, who live there. Most Russians there don't speak Chinese. It's still like very different language, right? It's vastly different. So many more people can speak English. I figured out that I like languages. I really enjoy remembering words, reading texts, working with a dictionary. And I thought if I learn Chinese, it can give me more opportunities for career, for finding a job in the future.
Well, this sounds interesting to me because I'm from America and our neighbor to the south is Mexico. And so you're always growing up with Spanish around you. But for you, your neighbor to the south was China. Right.
I actually did think about that analogy as well. The difference is that the Chinese language is still much more different, right? Like completely different language systems, language groups. Like Spanish is probably slightly similar. So it's a bit more challenging, I think.
Well, Dennis, I have to point something out here is that obviously we are speaking in English right now. So Chinese is not the only language that you learned. I mean, you've learned English as well. I want to know a little bit like, how was that language development and language journey for you? What kind of order was that for you and which one took precedence at what different stages of your life?
So I started learning English very early when I was 6, thanks to my mom, and Chinese when I was 14. So starting to learn Chinese was more like my personal choice. I thought hey, I like learning English. Why not to try Chinese as well? I was thinking, is it different? Probably I was a little bit too confident when it came to Chinese. I thought it will be the same as learning English. Like, for instance, in Russian, we have quite a lot of borrowed words from English. So things for technology and science, like information would be informация in Russian, right? It's slightly easier. But then when I got to studying Chinese, I actually understood that there was learning curve was much steeper.
What was that like? I mean, was Chinese offered as a class in school?
Not many high schools teach Chinese yet, unfortunately. So basically, my parents helped me to find a school and even a tutor. But also, I was studying a little bit on myself. I did flashcards. I actually created the flashcards myself. I just had a bunch of papers and wrote the characters. And by the way, I think it's a good way to study, to create your flashcards yourself. Maybe an interesting fact for educators. So some of the textbooks were like textbooks written in Russia by Russian professors. So those tended to be a little bit maybe outdated. Like probably what they were teaching was good, but slightly outdated, right? Mm-hmm. So not as exciting or something. And after that, I got my hands with books printed in China, like Beijing Foreign Education Press. And those were slightly more interesting. But still, later when I found things like Chinese Pod and some other textbooks, those were like even more useful, more exciting resources. So I started learning Chinese when I was 14. So I was learning Chinese in Russia for about 3 years. And when I graduated from high school, I decided that I would like to go to China because it was so close to my hometown. And I thought it's exciting, very large country. I would like to see that. So I moved to China when I was 17.
In 17, where did you move to?
As a matter of fact, I moved to the city of Daling in the north of China first.
For listeners, it's a little bit on the sea. It's over there on the Korean Peninsula.
It's very close to the Korean Peninsula. There is sea right there. Very nice climate and hiking. And the language spoken there is Northern Chinese for sure, right? Mm-hmm. So it's slightly different from Shanghai here, where I am at right now.
Wait a second, Dennis. 17-year-old Russian kid, you move to Dalian. Were you all by yourself? How was this? It's not very often you have a 17-year-old kid moves to a new country by themselves who maybe you don't have all the proficiency in the language still at that stage.
So I did know a little bit of language before. Like, of course, my father was with me on the first trip on the plane. He helped me to settle a little bit. And I was also kind of enrolling in a language school.
Okay. All right. So that's good. That's good. Mm-hmm. But what was your Chinese like that, and what was that experience like for you?
I was able to order food, but very, very quickly I discovered that like my Chinese is not good enough to hold a conversation, to feel confident, not even close to my English back then.
So what was that like? Your dad took you over there, helped you get settled in, but I mean, you're a 17-year-old kid living in China now by yourself and going to language school. I mean, what happened?
I think it was a lot of fun. It was freedom, right? When you're 17 years old, it's like your post-teenage years. So you really want to see the world by yourself. You want to explore. So I was just studying a lot, talking to people a lot, to my Chinese teacher, trying to make Chinese friends, trying to practice my languages as much as I can. I remember, like, times were slightly different back then, right? Like, these days, everyone is so connected. You can go on your WhatsApp, on WeChat, and talk to your parents. It was 2007 back then, so it was a little bit harder to talk to my parents. I would have to call them to buy the IP cards. Also, people there were still not that used to foreigners, so there was more of a foreigner surprise back then. But when I was doing research on Shanghai, when I was going to move to Shanghai, I went to Wikipedia and I was checking out the article on Shanghai, and it said that in Shanghai, people speak Shanghainese. So I figured, should I go to Shanghai to learn Putonghua, right? I thought, what if all people there actually speak Shanghainese and like no one speaks Putonghua or only some people speak? But then I figured, I did some research on universities and I found that a lot of people do go there to study language, to study some other degrees. And like, I didn't miss out. Like, everyone obviously speaks Putonghua here.
you moved to Shanghai. And is that where you went to university? Because I know you went to a Chinese university, right?
First, I did a 1 year of Chinese language studies here in Shanghai. It was not a private school like done specifically for foreigners. It was a language courses for foreign students with university. So that was at the Shanghai University of Finance and Economics, but that were language courses. So I was studying Chinese for 1 year. I would recommend if you're a younger person, you're looking for ways to learn Chinese, I think that is a good way. It was quite structured. I was attending classes every day from like 9 to 12, and in the afternoon it was free time, so I could do some homework. I could go out and explore Shanghai and talk to people. The textbooks were created by Chinese publishing houses. So those courses were also quite high volume, so we had like a lot of texts. Like maybe some students complained that it was slightly boring or maybe too much work, but I think that is a good way to learn Chinese. But if you combine that with other learning sources like podcasts, ChinesePod, I was using quite a lot, and some other tools that I found myself.
So I want to hear this, like Dennis, because I've heard a lot of different experiences people have had at Chinese universities studying Chinese, from good to maybe not so good. It sounds like for you, you had a good experience. But I think you're already touching on something where I kind of think this is going, is that if you were just relying on the classroom experience alone, maybe it may not be as good, but it sounds like you're supplementing, you're doing more than just going to class. And so maybe you could talk about that a little bit. What are some of the things you did that really kind of helped your Chinese when you were going through some of these programs?
Some of the classes we had were listening, reading, writing, those basic things. Those are all important, but they were not as exciting for me. So some of the very early beginner lessons, they were teaching me the word how to play piano, right? Tan gan qing. And I remember when I was learning that word, I thought, like, why would I use that? Like, these days, people don't play piano that much. It's really something a teacher would like you to learn because it's a good thing, maybe like classic music. And I remember some time passed, and then I did have to use that word. We actually did go to a classic music concert with my friends. And then I thought, like, tan gan qing. And I thought, okay, I didn't know this word, but 6 years passed from the time I learned that and I actually used that. But then there were things like Chinese Pod, where I remember really well, there was an episode on going to the gym. And I thought, wow, this is really useful. I go to the gym quite often. I'm really interested in those kind of vocabulary. It's really related to my life, to our modern life in Shanghai. But also what's really important is to try to read things that are interesting to you as early as you can. So all these words that the textbooks were trying to teach me, not necessarily I was really interested in those, but when I bought a magazine on workouts, I was really interested to learn how to say protein shake in Chinese or how to say dumbbell. So even the text was quite advanced. I was really motivated. So motivation was there for me to get into this paragraph. Maybe there were a lot of characters that I was not familiar with, but I would go and find each character one by one in the dictionary and really write those down. So motivation is really important. So as early as you can, you should try and read materials that are interesting to you, even though they can be slightly challenging.
You know, that is something that we talk about a lot in linguistics and language education. We call this the affect dimension, includes things like motivation and interest. And so what you're talking about is so important, is finding something that's interesting, you enjoy, but something that's relevant, right?
Some of those textbooks, you wouldn't find any memes right there, right? But even though like memes are something people day to day actually talk about and think about and send to each other. So you can diversify your study materials. You shouldn't only study Chinese by looking at memes, but from time to time, finding something what's hyped these days is also okay. And it's more fun.
After now, you've gone to Shanghai and you were studying Chinese.
I was studying the language for a couple of months and then I was trying to figure out what's next. I did some research and I thought I would like to study in China at a Chinese university. I would like to study finance. And then I was doing research. So what do I need for that? And turns out you need HSK, right? You have to pass the exam. And that became my goal. If I remember correctly, you had to have the sixth level to get admitted at the university.
So you did the HSK. Well, fast forward a little, you got into school. But what was that like actually now going to a Chinese university, studying finance in Chinese?
So when you are enrolling into university, there is a lot of excitement builds up, right? It's something you've been preparing to for many years from high school. Like, okay, now that's where things get interesting, where you can study a subject that you're interested in, like economics or engineering. And then there is the first day I looked at the schedule and it was math. I didn't really enjoy studying math at school, but because it's finance, there is a little bit math. And I thought, okay, as far as I know, like math in China is taught quite high level. So I was a little bit scared of that.
It is, yes.
But I was thought like in Russia, mathematics are taught also at quite a decent level. So I thought I'm ready for that. Turns out I was not at all. It was first day, 8 a.m. because like classes did start very early. And it was higher advanced mathematics. And when the professor started writing those things, I figured like, okay, I don't understand anything. Another thing that really complicated matters was the professor was Shanghainese. He was kind of speaking with a very thick Shanghainese accent.
Oh. So what did you do? I mean, how did you handle that situation?
So with math, it's slightly easier because it's formulas, right? It's international language. But still, I had to find a tutor for myself. It was another Chinese student from second year, and I did have to study a lot. So math was quite hard, but is okay in terms of language. But there were a lot of challenging subjects. There was accounting, economics. Basically, the way the expectations at the university are that even though you are foreign students and you study, so we did study together with Chinese students, and we did take the same exams. Kind of expectations for us was just to pass. So if you did score 60 out of 100, then you would pass and it would be okay.
Gotcha, yeah.
Also, the way exams are structured, 50 or 60% would be test questions. So like multiple choice. So that's slightly easier, right? For a non-native speaker, you just have to tick. Mm-hmm. But with the question where you actually had to write, that's where the challenge arrived, right? Because even if I learned, I memorized everything, I could type it, but writing is really hard.
So were they requiring you to handwrite?
It's true. I don't know if things changed recently, but I did have to handwrite. And basically,
oh, that's hard.
So let's say you understand the subject, something like monetary policy, you know your thing. But when it comes to writing, then you start to forget characters. And like,
Well, I'm curious to know something, Dennis. At like what stage did you really start learning the concepts and learning everything like in Chinese? Because I know that at the beginning, a lot of times we have that propensity to maybe translate or leverage some of the things from our native language, or in this case, it could have been English or Russian to help along. But at what stage were you able to like fully like do everything in Chinese?
I think actually at that stage, at very first year, it was already where I was starting to grasp the concepts in Chinese. Probably the input part worked best for me, not the output part. Like if you required for me to talk, to have a deep conversation about some concepts, that would be slightly challenging. But I did understand everything I was reading, obviously. So if I had to write a paper, then writing a paper in English would be easier for me. And in Chinese, it wouldn't be as good, but it was fine.
Did you have any experience when you were studying where you really were able to use your Chinese in a really good way, or something that even surprised your own self?
I was trying to organize my day to make sure I read the hardest things in the morning. So I was waking up at 7 and then starting to study immediately. I had that microeconomics textbook all in Chinese. And like when I realized that I do understand that, even though it was taking me time, like my reading speed would be slower than in English, maybe 2 times slower. But when I realized that I did understand, then it was a happy moment, right? I thought like I was very proud of myself, and it was rewarding because I thought in the future I would be able to read economic news in Chinese, I would be able to work in a Chinese company.
Well, Dennis, this sounds really cool. I mean, that's a great experience and a great feeling when you're like, I can do this, right? My Chinese, it's great. It's getting there. What happened then? I mean, you graduated, you moved on now to a career. But what was that experience like now? You're looking for a job in the Chinese market.
So when you study Chinese, you talk to people who are more experienced than you are, or you go online and read commentaries. And very often the opinion is like, no matter how much you learn, Chinese is still challenging. Like you wouldn't be really able to use it at the workplace. So that sounded like a challenge for me. I thought, okay, is it true? Let's check it out. Let's give it a few years. I will learn Chinese as well as I can and then check it out. So right now I work at a Chinese company and many of our meetings are in Chinese. So many of my colleagues' English is quite good. If they wanted, we could have these meetings in English for sure. But knowing Chinese helps me to be in those meetings. Sometimes I speak in Chinese. Sometimes when I have to sound more confident or kind of convey something in a better way, I would use English. And also because we are a technology company, like actually talking about technology, if I have to talk about technology in Chinese, then it's really challenging. Like I can feel like my brain will catch a fire or something like that. So I do use English at my meetings as well. But the fact that I can speak Chinese really allows me to be on those meetings, to participate. And we did have foreign colleagues with me who did not speak Chinese and they kind of left the company after that. So it's really useful for me. If you're thinking for yourself, like, should you learn the language for that? My comment would be that language will not give you a job per se. You have to have some kind of skill, but Chinese language can help you with finding a job. And if you're really interested in the country, in the culture, you're sure that your life will be related to China in some way, then you should learn the language. It's totally worth it.
That's actually very good advice. Some students might think, oh, because I can speak Chinese, I will get a job. And I mean, unless you're going to go into translation or something, you know, maybe, but usually not, right? You got to have some sort of skill and Chinese can be that thing that enhances it and opens up more opportunities to apply the skill that you have.
It's great to have some other kind of a skill. So that's probably a disadvantage of studying in China. When you graduate from the university, entry-level jobs, options are not as good as in your home country. But what Chinese language gives to me, I think it's really an insider perspective into the society, into the country. So many people these days are interested in China. We talk a lot about China, China's economy, but what people actually think here, right? What is their perspective? Learning Chinese and working in a company or studying at university really allows you to see for yourself. And for me, that's the best part. Living or working in China these days is very exciting because the economy is growing so fast. All these companies, they do amazing things.
So Dennis, I want to hear from your perspective for the future, like for people learning Chinese. How important or how useful do you think Chinese is going to be for people who are learning it right now?
So there are different opinions on that. The level of English is getting really better in China right now, especially in Shanghai. So many people speak really good English, get great education from overseas and come back to China. Manage the expectations here. Chinese language is something extra, but it can be very helpful. Going forward, I was thinking, it's my theory, like if we are seeing peak English right now, for instance, in Japan, as I understand, the level of English kind of declined slightly over recent years. So maybe we're seeing peak English, like so many young kids learn English in China right now. Maybe that will go down. So in that case, Chinese will be even more useful for you in the future. But otherwise, it's a great quest. It's a great challenge to learn the language. It gives you insight into the culture. So I think it's definitely worth it.
And so what advice would you give to someone who's learning Chinese right now?
There are some life hacks. One thing that I'm really into in terms of just my life philosophy, you should try to find some things that have low barrier to entry, some tasks that are not that hard to start, but do that regularly every day or every week. So in terms of learning language, spaced repetition software like Anki helped me a lot. So actually what I did when I woke up, the first 20 minutes when you have a very fresh mind, right? Like your brain is ready to learn new things. I would review the words on Anki. And my goal was to learn 20 new words every day. That might sound like a lot. Like in 10 days, it's 200 words. 100 days, it's 2,000. And then it's 6,000. I was thinking, like, can you actually learn 6,000 new words in a year? And it turned out, yes, you can. Just if you do that regularly, like sometimes that would build up. There be a little bit of a backlog for new words. But after some time, you clear that up and you actually do remember. It's the way memory works. If you use spaced repetition, you can learn a lot. So I'm confident anyone can learn 1,500 Chinese characters in a year if they use spaced repetition and just study by themselves as well.
That's really exciting. That's really great to hear that that's something that worked out well for you.
And also, I know you guys work on graded readers, and I do think that's a good idea. I kind of wish I had that when I was just starting to learn Chinese back in the early days. I remember when I was in the city of Dalian my first year, I thought, okay, I'm interested. I would like to buy a book and start learning characters, learning how to read. And I bought a children's book. The good point about children's books is that pinyin with tones is there, right? Because Chinese kids also have to learn that. But because there were so many new characters, I had to look up each new character one by one, even though it was children's book. And it was frustrating. Yep. Like, it helped that there was pinyin. You could look up the words by pinyin. So, like, graded reader, which bring you from one level to another, when you go to next level and you are sure you know all the characters you are supposed to know, I think that's a very good idea and kind of eliminates a lot of frustration from the learning process.
Well, Dennis, this has been really interesting to hear your perspective. And I am proud to say that you are the first Russian we've had on our podcast.
Thanks a lot, Jared.
You have been listening to the You Can Learn Chinese podcast. Help us spread the word by sharing this with your friends, classmates, teachers, cousins, niece, changemaker, joke teller, tree climber, popcorn eater, treat taster, and that one gal named Irene. You can subscribe on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And please write us a review so we know how we're doing. You can find us on Facebook and at MannerCompanion.com. Apologies to John Cena, we just ran out of time. The You Can Learn Chinese podcast is produced by myself, Jared Turner, and our editor is James Harper with Filter Productions. I'd like to thank our guest, Dennis Suslov, and of course, thanks to my co-host, the man, the myth, the legend, John Patterson. See you next time.